Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, ladies and gents, it's that time. Turn up your speakers, strap on a smile. It's the Sims and Lefko Podcast. Here's your host, Adam Lefko and Chris Sims.
All right, okay, episode 62 of the Sims and Lefko. Is it 62?
It's 62
of the Sims. I don't have any.
I mean, you should have one. Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce.
I mean, not Travis Kelce, your center.
Oh, Jason Kelce.
Jason Kelce.
All right, Jason Kelce, number 62. I haven't seen you, like a week and a half?
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah.
Really nice to have you.
Josh, really solid.
Do you have a 62 for us?
62. No good 62.
No Rutgers 62.
Yeah, I'm not going to waste one on a random 62.
I think
the
62
guy
that came to my head was, you know, the big, big fat defensive lineman from Alabama, Cody. He was 62.
Terrence Cody.
Yeah, Mount Cody. I think he was 62 as well.
Cody. Hey, Control Room, how are you guys? I just realized we don't have a camera person here right now.
Wow.
We have no
sticky fingers, but we have a beautiful control room.
Good thing we got
nine people
back there doing nothing.
The guy standing right there, it's kind of to the right in the middle. His wife could have a baby at any moment.
Wow, wife at any moment.
And if Ryan gets the call, let's cut to the control room just so we can see him run out. Let's just make sure that happens.
Can we just go to the back there and just like the two guys that have blend into the whiteboard, Cam and Canvasser. Holy
Very
cow.
Good.
Canvasser's forehead is whiter than the whiteboard. Look at that. It's unbelievable.
And of course, hi, George. How are you? You feeling good back there? George is so good at having conversations by himself.
I see myself.
I love you.
All right.
So I'm excited because the draft is over. And I'm thrilled that the draft is
but
over.
I'm glad the draft is over. But what is this?
It was a nice gift.
Oh, my gosh.
I was really
Deep
proud of
Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy in this book here.
Have
you seen this?
I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me. What have you been doing?
I didn't know what to do with myself. Well, I thought I was going to have to work last week at least a few days. And then Mother Hen, you know, was like Monday night, like, you don't need to come in Tuesday. And then Tuesday, Mother Hen texts me and goes, you know, you might not have to come in all week. So I just was dad all week. And I got to work out and get back into shape. I mean, can you tell me?
So hold on.
Did you get some quality time with Philip last week?
Quality time with Philip.
Why don't you tell us about it, Chris?
Yeah, I kept him out of school 2 days because I'm...
How old is Philip?
Family first, school second, okay?
Wow. He's going to place this on family values.
Yeah. So you held your kid out of school for 2 days because you're like, I want to play with him.
Yes, exactly. And yeah.
Isn't that going to hurt his development as a human?
It's preschool. Come on. Let's get over it. Yes.
What is he learning?
But my little girl who's in third grade gets pissed when she comes home and she's like, he didn't go to school? Why did I have to go to school? So I have to hear that conversation, which is actually not worth it at the end of the day. I think I'll send him to school
next
time.
What do you do all day with the little dude?
We hang out in the
morning. Can you tell everyone how old he is?
Do I tell her? Well, he's five. I did not tell everybody. Yes, Philip is five. In the morning, hang out, whatever it may be. There's definitely some Star Wars on Disney Infinity right now that he's obsessed with, so we'll do that on Xbox. we do that. Then I take him to the gym, and then I put him in the child care area for about an hour and a half.
How does he do in situations like that?
He's great. He's a lot like his father. He has a big mouth, and he's social.
He's talking to everybody.
Right, so he's not afraid to go around and talk
to people.
I don't
know if we ever shared how his relationship with Fendrick is.
Yes, when he was...
That would take an entire podcast to
just
to
whispering...
Tell.
curse words into his
ears. Well, the trade back from the Super Bowl.
For those at home, yes, I let my kids curse at home. At home, they can say whatever. I let them say whatever. I let it go. Yeah. So I come home sometimes, and my little boy will be like, "Hey, Dad, missed you today, you little." He'll say that to me. So there you go. Edit that out.
But it's a 5-year-old.
It's a 5-year-old. So
then when he met Josh, and Josh is like, "Well, little child, sit next to me on the bus and look at this. That is this monument." And he was like, "You're a sh**.
You little sh**."
The whole train ride.
Yeah, I'm getting him ready for the mean streets of New York, you know, trash talking the
mean
NFL,
old Greenwich streets.
NBA, whatever it is. He'll be ready to go.
All right, I didn't know what you were doing. I want to do a quick run through of what we're going to be touching on. First, our guest on episode 62 is going to be Rhonda Barber, and I have not prepared for this at all on purpose because this is a good friend of Sims that whenever Sims talks about the Bucks, he always talks about Rhonda. I'm letting you lead this interview. Very excited. Then I want to talk about the quarterback carousel. There's a few teams in the NFL right now that we thought were going to figure out their quarterback issue. They haven't. Right. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And Steph Curry just got named unanimous MVP.
Which is ridiculous.
Oh, ridiculous. We had not talked. Don't say anything. Save it.
Freaking ridiculous.
So, try not to talk about stuff. Okay. First of all, you've been away from the draft now for a week or two. Me and Josh were extremely busy last week.
Josh and I.
Yeah.
Thank
Josh
you.
And I were extremely busy last week. We went to D.C. and went house hunting with Josh Norman.
Okay.
And then I went to Cincinnati and checked out Tyler Eifert's house of the Bengals.
Right.
Tyler Eifert is a super bro with an arrow that he shot from his kitchen into his backyard.
Did he have super bro shoes like you
no,
did?
No, I'm talking, like, everything he had was like, here's Nike, and then, like, here's muscle milk that we're giving you. Like, he hung up his jersey the day before we got there.
Right.
Like, he has nothing on the walls. Like, he's still that much of a bro.
Yeah.
Josh Norman, on the other hand, I had an amazing experience with. Josh, our producer had to come down, like, the night before because one of our other producers had to go on a different shoot.
Right.
What was your take on Norman?
I thought he was the man. I was just going to say that you made me dab in front of him, which was even more awkward than me dabbing on the podcast.
So for people that don't realize, when I do stuff with athletes, I need to be cool the entire time because I need the athlete to like me.
Right.
So that's why I will publicly try and humiliate sometimes the producer. But Josh just does it on himself.
I just got to take it. Yeah.
Yeah. Josh is like, he's like, yeah, it was great.
So let me
you want to know what we talked? Well, the coolest part for Josh Norman, other than the fact that we checked out all these amazing mansions and stuff, was there was a second car ride where we're mic'd up and we have cameras on all that stuff, and I think he legitimately forgot that he was on camera, even though, like, what was the dude's name in the back seat?
The audio guy. I got stuck
Eric,
him in
the
trunk.
Audio guy who's just, like, in the back of the trunk, and I'm driving. I'm driving.
Right.
And I'm the worst driver ever.
Yes.
But in the beginning, I go, okay, he loves Batman. I knew that. So he's in the car, and I put on, like, the soundtrack to The Dark Knight.
Right.
And it was like, duh, duh. He goes, turn it off. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I will transition into the football, Josh Norman, and you don't want that. And I was like, really? I was like, no, just sit back, and I want to see what happens.
Right.
And he was like, turn it off. And he was very adamant.
Right.
He was like, when I get to the stadium, I listen to my Batman stuff, and I get into that mode.
That
to me is crazy. And we talked a long time about, like, switches and, like, hitting it. And I was like, does Cam Newton have a switch? He goes, nah. He's like, Cam is just always a gamer.
Yeah, right.
He's like, he's just always like that, whatever.
Right.
So then we're talking, and I was like, yo, so what's the deal with Odell?
Yeah.
Like, how was he, Odell? Mm-hmm. And he kind of got, like, annoyed or whatever. But he was like, man, I don't know why people still care about it. He's like, I don't think about the dude. I don't care about the dude. He probably doesn't care about me. And I said, Josh, understand. The media likes rivalries.
Right.
Rocky had Apollo. I said, you're Batman.
Yeah.
That's your Joker.
Right. And the fact that he was on the NFL Network a month ago and didn't put him as one of the five best receivers in football.
I go, you're Batman, he's Joker.
Right.
He goes, I wouldn't give him the respect of calling him the Joker. And I go, okay, then he's your Penguin. He goes, no, that's my Two-Face. And I was like, oh, he's like, that's Harvey Dent.
Wow.
And I was like, man, like, so there's still something there.
Right.
I'm even say this now. I don't even care. He did an article for the Players Tribune called Steal Your Baloney. So I went, and it was a whole thing about how when he was growing up, he had baloney and his brothers would take it and all that stuff. So I bought him baloney as a joke and put it in one of the houses. And he's like, oh, they made that whole article up. And then the end of the article, it said, see you twice a year, bro, to Odell Beckham Jr. And he goes, I wouldn't call that dude my bro. He's not my bro. And I was like, okay, well, that article is not accurate.
Bull crap.
But the other thing that I thought was interesting, too, is I said, what do you say to the guys that say you're a zone corner and aren't and not responsible for covering the best guy, the Julio's, Antonio's every down?
Right.
He goes, 5 years, 75, 31 guaranteed.
Right.
You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's what I just got paid,
right.
And that is premier corner money. So you could say whatever you want.
Right.
I'm executing the system to the best of the ability, which I love.
Which I'm not mad at him for.
I asked him.
I'd have never paid him that much money.
Yeah.
No way. And that, I mean, you
know, I said
he
I
didn't
said,
even think he was worth that much money. I mean, he wanted to ask him back to Carolina.
Yes, he did. So I asked him about that
Go ahead,
too.
Right.
So I asked him one, why did you choose DC?
Right.
He said
he's from the area.
No, he's from South Carolina.
South Carolina.
Okay.
He said, they're on TV all the time. It's a major market. The dude knows the game.
Sure.
He's on TV 8 times a year. He knew that or whatever. And I said, what did you think when they cut you? He said, that was the dumbest shit ever. And I said, well, what happened? He goes, I don't know what happened with all that. We were negotiating back and forth and they just released me because they didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
He goes, think about how much money I could have made on the open market with competition in March. He goes, we wanted 16. He goes, I got 15.
Right.
He goes, look, we weren't. I wasn't asking for a crazy number.
Let's talk about that. His on March. Who do you have to compete with? Janoris Jenkins.
Janoris Jenkins and Sean Smith.
Right. So Janoris Jenkins, really.
Sean Smith came out to 10 a year.
Right.
Janoris Jenkins, I think, came out to what, 12 or 13 a year.
Right.
But it's just all the other teams. That's what he was saying. It would have been a fight instead of me calling up teams after all that stuff.
That's an interesting discussion. Listen, I would never have played him that much money. Never.
Yes.
I think that's the interesting discussion with him and Richard Sherman.
I will
right
say
now.
This. The one thing before we go to Rondé, because I know he's like waiting right now. The one thing about Jess, so put on your headphone.
Yeah.
He is a hard worker.
Yes.
He is a grinder. He has an edge that he's had for a long time.
Sure.
When you study up on him and you see how many times he's been passed over and all that stuff, his love of film, his room, he's dedicating a whole room to just watch film and all that stuff. He leaves the facility. He needs more. I got that vibe from him. He's obsessed with being the best. I said, why do you like facing Julio and Antonio Brown? He goes, because I'm finally getting challenged.
Right.
Like, I love it. I love that. So I did kind of really fall in love with Justin.
Yeah, I can get that. Wait,
right,
he's
to a
from
guy,
South Carolina, though?
He's from a
but
bad...
But where did he grow up?
Didn't
same,
get recruited.
Same area, too?
I'm not sure. Let me get to Rondé, all right? Five-time All-Pro. This is a guy that did it, and this isn't about projection. This guy did it. Five-time All-Pro, 47 picks, 28 sacks. He's in the elusive 40-20 club, and he's a part of the NFL 2000 All-Decade team, Rondé Barber, and also very good friend of the podcast and close friend of Sims. So, Sims, take it away.
What's up, man? How you doing?
What's up, Christopher?
See? He can call me Christopher because we go back. So you're sitting in your house right now?
I'm in my office, chilling.
See, that's when you know you're a rich ex-NFL player.
When
I'm sitting in my office now, chilling.
I'm an ex-NFL player. Y'all are talking about these new cornerbacks money. I'm not rich anymore. I've just made some money.
You know what? That's actually a great starting point right there. I like that because this is the kind of discussions. Me and Rondé, his wife Claudia, who's as cool as it gets.
Yeah.
We were regulars, right? Friday night, date night, basically. Your wife, my wife, and we'd go to a dinner, and I mean, we had a great time with them that whole time in Tampa. But let's talk about that. I do think it's ridiculous. The quarterback, I'm talking about quarterbacks, guys throwing the football, first of all. Do you think that's ridiculous with the amount of money those guys are getting right now? Guys like Sam Bradford, Nick
Brock
Foles,
Osweiler.
Brock Osweiler. I, as an ex-quarterback, of course, I don't get it. Why they're making so much more money than guys like we talk about Cam Chancellor all the time, where we say, is a guy like Sam Bradford worth three Cam Chancellors? So I want to hear your take on that first.
You know what? You're just like me. You're an ex-athlete that's jealous that you're not playing anymore.
Yes. I'm sitting here.
Yeah, you know what? The way I look at it, I'm not hating on their money or anything, but yes, they're overpaid, but they deserve to be overpaid because there's a process that's allowing them to make that much money.
Right.
Obviously, the cap continues to go up year in, year out, and you know what? It only takes one person to love you, to pay you that much money, and the market dictates. It's supply and demand. It's, you know, whoever made that arbitrary number, the one, whatever it is, 30-something. I don't even know what the cap is right now.
Right,
whoever made that number, however that's calculated, you know, a person on your team is going to get a percentage of it, and the quarterback, obviously being the most important position, is going to get the bulk of that. And it's, I mean, look at baseball. Yeah. I was talking to my buddy today about baseball, and I can't remember who just signed today, $75 million or something. And I'm like, the sport's not even that interesting, and they're making $75 million because it's there for them to make.
Yes. You know,
the revenue is there. The fandom is there. So, you know what? They reap the benefits.
Yeah.
And we're ex-athletes that just probably 10 years too late. Well,
to the quarterback thing, it's mainly because you guys are always portrayed as divas. And I'm curious. Rondé's in the locker room.
Right.
Young spark pug Slim Sims walks in. What was the vibe when Chris walked in early on?
But Chris wasn't a diva. Chris was like self-deprecating.
See? There you go.
I believe it.
Yeah, you're right. I was.
Christopher was hard on himself, and you know he had a hard coach. You know, John was not the easiest on young quarterbacks,
to say the least. Yeah,
you speak the truth. Get it out.
Well, no, I mean I think Rondé. First of all, the defensive side of the football, they were one of the greatest defenses of all time. So I got there. I was a rookie. They saw me. I think they said, "Wow, this kid works hard. He's got a little talent." He could take Gruden cussing him out all the time. And
all the time, right.
It didn't matter. If Brad Johnson threw a bad pass, he'd look at me and go, "What the hell, Chris?" I mean, he literally like, "Look at me." But I think, yeah, Rondé, Warren.
What was that whole defense like?
Oh, my gosh. The personalities. First of all, you have to start with the coaches. Monty Kiffin, yep. Mike Tomlin, Rod Marinelli, who's the D coordinator of the Cowboys, Joe Barry, who's the D coordinator of the Washington Redskins. Yes. This is all on that staff. It's a phenomenal staff. They had tremendous confidence. And then it filtered down to guys like Rondé and Sapp and Simeon Rice,
yes.
who, of course, had
yep.
great confidence as well, but more was being instilled in them. And they were the type that would be pissed off if I caught a completion on them as a second team or third team quarterback in practice and got like a 20-yard completion. I mean, they'd be pissed off like later yeah. that day. Like, you know, what did you see there? What did we do wrong? What? So they had tremendous pride, attention to detail, and of course they had great self-confidence.
Yeah,
we were a talented group too. I mean, we drafted well from '96 to about '99. A bunch of the guys that we brought into the building were homegrown. I mean, I think Simeon really, let me think back. I think Simeon on that defense, on that championship defense, Simeon and maybe another guy were the only two that were off the street. So we were very fortunate, you know, with our personnel department, bringing in guys that contributed and ended up being great players, you know, perennial Pro Bowl type players that played for a long time and eventually won a Super Bowl with that defense. But yeah, you know, we felt like we were a unit, like together, just like Seattle is now. You know, a bunch of guys that are homegrown, bring them in. They're working for one cause. They're not vigilantes. You know, they're not out getting a payday coming to your team.
Right.
And you play together. People talk about playing together, the chemistry. That's what it is, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's the thing. I would love for you to share that. Like, what are some of the memories or things that jump at about you with the defense, whether it's in the locker room or not? Because I always tell them a story about when we were in Tokyo. And the defense decided, like, the hell with curfew. We're awesome, and we're not going. And I'm with the defense, and I'm like, I'm not going. And Sapp looks at me and goes, get your rookie ass out of here and get to the hotel. Yeah. So
you went home. Nobody else did. Yeah, that was I don't know if that was one of our shining moments on the team.
I thought it was a shining moment in my career. One Eye Jack was the best strip club I was ever in my life. In Tokyo, it was unbelievable. The most beautiful girls I've ever seen. And then Sapp sitting there with like $1 million of yen, which was like $100, but it was like $1 million yen. And the Mr. Me are the Karate Kid headband around his head in this place. And I said, this is out of a book. I have to write this in a book one day.
Yeah, you know what? That probably wasn't the best trip for us to take after the Super. We were already on top of the world.
Yes.
We go to Japan and just live like kings for 5 days. I wasn't even working that week. Remember, I had knee surgery that offseason, so I wasn't doing anything other than just hanging out. They asked me if I wanted to go, just to go. I mean, I guess I did some rehab, but
yeah.
I didn't play in a game. I didn't practice. All I did was enjoy Japan, man. It was awesome.
When you look at, like, Josh Norman, and we were talking about that a second ago, with all the money he is making right now, you know, you were kind of one of those guys that was maybe more of a zone corner, per se.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. What do you think of that discussion when you hear, like, oh, Josh Norman is not as much man-to-man as a Darrell Revis, Aqib Talib? What's kind of your thought there?
It's a Richard Sherman discussion, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, I think guys are athletes. Josh Norman is a phenomenal athlete. And they ask him to do a certain job – I remember talking to Ron Rivera about this last year when we had one of their games, and he was telling me about his eyes. You know, Josh, that, you know, Josh has a unique skill set. Yes, he can play on the line of scrimmage if they need him to. We've seen him do that. I've seen games where he's done that.
Right.
But he plays with his eyes in the backfield, and he does it better than anybody in the business because he's so long and he's really athletic. We actually, I don't know if you guys know which game I'm talking about, but the game where Drew Brees was injured.
Oh, it was second game of the year, the Saints. Josh McCown. Or Luke McCown.
Luke McCown, yeah. And he Josh, right?
Luke.
Josh is in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Played with both of them. He throws that interception to Josh Norman in the back of the end zone.
Right.
And I'm telling you, it was a touchdown from where I was standing from. It was going to be a great throw, great catch. And Josh made that ridiculous acrobatic interception. And having just talked to Ron Rivera about this kid's athleticism and the way he plays the ball with his eyes in the backfield, I was like, that's the perfect example of what he does. So they utilize his strength. And Richard Sherman's the same way.
Right.
There's certain guys that play on the line of scrimmage better than others. You know, Revis, Aqib, I can go through the kids, Xavier Rhodes in Minnesota.
Sure.
Is big, strong. He doesn't have great ball skills, but he plays on the line of scrimmage and he beats guys up. So, I mean, depending on what you're asked to do, and these guys are all good players. I mean, it's comparing, you know, greatness to one another. It's almost impossible. I can make an argument for one or the other. They're just all good players, man. And Josh Norman deserves what he got. I'll say this. I'm not sure what happened in Carolina, why he's not there. I'm surprised. I'm shocked by it.
Right.
Yeah.
But somebody deserved his talent, and he got it.
One thing that's been funny to watch, Sims, is we've run into Lynch, we've run into a few other Tampa Bay guys.
Right.
The stories always seem to get back to Sapp because everyone was just like amazed at like what this guy was. You were telling a story the other day about Sapp racing Booger McFarland.
Yes.
It was a big thing. And I'm curious, I don't want Sims to tell the story yet, but Ronnie, do you remember when Sapp raced Booger?
Yeah, but I can't remember who won.
Booger won.
Honestly, Booger won. Sapp had whatever reason Sapp had for not winning.
Right.
You know what? Everything starts with Sapp because Sapp, on a team full of huge personalities, Sapp's was like 1,001 times bigger.
Right.
You know, Simeon, you had Brooks, who was he's kind of the Don, you know, he's overlooking everybody.
Yes.
It was what he was. I really wasn't even into my own at that point. I was still young. During those Super Bowl runs, I was only 26 when we won a Super Bowl, so my personality really hadn't exerted itself in that unit. And Sapp was just—he was larger than life, and he treated everybody like he was larger than life.
Man,
Sapp was the kind of guy.
Story about it.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, right. Like in the old One Buck Place. First of all, the old One Buck Place I've told you a little bit about.
Yes, it sounds like it was a dump.
It was a dump. That's being the nicest. It was a trailer, right. And like I said, you could hear the coaches in the other room. So if the coaches were having a meeting in one room and the players were sitting in one room watching film, like I could hear Gruden sometimes like bad-mouthing me to the coaches in the next room.
This kid sucks.
Right, like, why didn't he throw this ball? What an idiot. But with Sapp, in his case, as soon as you walk in the building, his voice, of course, it's so baritone and deep and he's so loud, you heard it as soon as you walk in the building. You're like, oh, Sapp's in the locker room already.
Yeah.
So it was just a polarizing thing right away, and he was always causing a ruckus. It was always whether he was going to talk about the NBA game from the night before. He was going to start a locker room ruckus on who's better, Steph Curry or LeBron James or whatever was. And I love that. So
who could, Ronde, who could step to Sapp? Like, who were the guys that, like could go toe-to-toe with him?
Brooks was his roommate.
Yes.
And if it was ever out of control, Brooks was the one.
Really?
I think everybody delegated, we got something to deal with Sapp.
Yes.
You know, he's the only one that can really get away with it. Because Sapp, in all his greatness, loved to talk people down, man. He's a great player, but he was an even better talker, man.
No, he was.
You weren't going to win an argument with him.
I got to say this now.
Yeah.
The guy I'm talking to, Ronde Barber, is the reason for one of my saddest moments of my whole life.
Yeah! He's an Eagles fan, Ronde!
Yes.
Yeah!
So here's the thing is, This was back at a time where, like, if you made a big play in sports, it would be on TV over and over and over and over again. And Philadelphia had owned the Bucks for, like, a number of years in a row. There was the whole, you guys couldn't win under 20 degrees.
Right.
Warren Sapp was talking trash, and he was like, we are beating the crap out of Sean King all the time. And then they're driving down, and Antonio frickin' Freeman is in the slot against Rondé, and Rondé takes it, what'd you take, like 87 yards to the house, something like that?
It's 92, 87, something in there.
Let's go with the 90s, it sounds better.
I'm just very curious, like, from your perspective, did you know it was going to happen? Like, what the heck happened on that play?
You know what, I saw him recently, I saw Antonio recently, and that's the first thing he said to me. He's like, oh, great, it's the cover two guy.
That's so...
Everybody thought that drive, Donovan was driving him down the field. He made a couple of fantastic plays on that drive. And we were pretty much in control of that game. But if they would have scored there, it would have been they would have been within a touchdown, maybe even a field goal of tying that game. But we thought, Monty, and whenever he felt pressure, he wanted to blitz. Whenever, like, the defense was crumbling a little bit, he wanted to blitz. So he called a couple of blitzes. They weren't working. They get in the red zone. The red zone, all we play was cover two. But I showed blitz to Donovan. He thought we were blitzing. He threw a hot, and Antonio ran a little out route, and we were playing cover two. It hit me right in the face. I just, I just had to outrun everybody. Actually, I think they gave up. They're like, ah.
Yeah, it's over.
Well, the worst part about that was watching you guys steamroll the Raiders and thinking the entire time, man, That could be us knocking the crap out of him, and it's like, But I'm happy for you. It was just like one of the worst moments ever.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
I can imagine. What's it like to be the guy that people tell you broke their dreams?
The worst is when, like, you ruined my childhood. You know, because that was, how many years ago was that now?
So, man, 13 years.
13 years ago?
Yeah.
So I run into mid-20s, these guys in the airport or whatever, and they're like, I was 10 years old and you ruined my life. I'm like, just one play.
Man, you should make the story so much better. Look at him and be like, yeah, that's why you turned out looking like this.
As bad as I made all you feel in Philly, I can't tell you what I did for all the people here in Tampa.
Oh.
That moment, I hear conversely, that moment for the people here in Tampa who had dealt with, mediocrity for years and years and years. Finally, we next this all the way into the Super Bowl and won. It was a good run for us.
It is funny. People talk about, like, the Royals last year and some of the – and, like, the Warriors where they are.
Right.
Man, the Buccaneers were one of the worst franchises of all time.
Yes.
Before the late 90s, early 2000s,
right,
when they switched it up. Man, so I can't even imagine. You guys are probably – big time here.
I mean, the Bucks always have a special place in my heart. He's the man down there. I mean, I would say Rondé Barber, Derek Brooks are the two most loved guys in the city of Tampa.
That's awesome.
Because of all they do for the community, too. Hey, last thing I wanted to ask you just about Tampa and specific with the Bucks. Jameis Winston, just talk about what he's like having around the city in the facility, because I know still know people over at the Bucks. What is it like being around him? What do you hear from other guys, whether it's in the city or on the team, just about him and as a person?
Well, Jameis has been nothing but, exemplary since he's been here in Tampa. Now, a lot of people wanted to discount his accomplishments, I think, in college because of the incidents that he had outside of football. But since he's been here, all he does is work. I mean, I'm in the building a bunch in the off season, especially getting ready for the preseason because I do their preseason games. So spending time with the GM, coaches, and equipment staff, all this, they love him. All he does is work. He loves football. He comes into the building every single day and he's trying to get himself better. And you appreciate that, especially a guy that's so talented and has been so successful in his career. Personally, I don't really know him that well. He calls me Mr. Barber, which drives me crazy. and I was telling my wife that the other day, and she's like, you are like 20 years older than him.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I guess I am. But the guy is phenomenal, man. He's got an impeccable will to win and to influence people. The guys in that have been around, a couple of years here there in Tampa, they're still a young team. There's a couple of guys that have been around. And unequivocally, they all say that he came in last year and just took over the locker room.
Right.
He's got that kind of personality. Kind of like Sapp. I mean, not not like Sapp, but you know, Sapp dominated his locker room.
Right.
There's absolutely no question about who was the leader in that locker room. And I think Jameis is the same way. And he comes in, he's got a big smile all the time. You know, he's always trying to be positive, and he performs. I mean, that's the definition of leadership for me, and that's what they have in them.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I'm a big fan. I know that.
Rondé, man, thanks so much for joining us, man. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
Say hi to the girls for me. Say hi to Mrs. Barber, okay, Mr. Barber?
Hey, you haven't seen the girls in a while, dude. They're 12, well, getting ready to be 13 and 14 here, man. And it's a house full of girls.
Oh, no, I've seen some pictures. I just want to know, I want a camera nearby the first few dates they got to go out and stuff. I want to see dad's reaction to the boyfriends coming to get them.
They're dating when they're 30, buddy.
Awesome. You the man. Good seeing you.
How are we going, Rondé?
All right, I'll talk to you. Rondé's awesome, first of all.
Yes.
We need to have him in here. That would be great. Because then we could really be natural, talk about some stories. Because I would have loved if he was here and we could talk about Tokyo and Roppongi and One-Eyed Jack.
I mean, what's Roppongi?
Roppongi is the area in Tokyo where everyone is to party, right? So we had a night off. We're going to play the Jets in the preseason game. We have to go to some little dinner with the Jets. And you could see everybody's been in training camp, and now we're not going to have curfew, but we have a little time to ourselves.
Yes, so in a foreign land.
You could tell, in a foreign land. You could tell the Jets, us, we were both like, damn, we got a little free time.
Let's get out of here.
Let's throw a drink down or two. Let's go have a beer, whatever it was. So we go to Roppongi. I'm with Rondé and a few other guys, and they go, hey, we're going to go to this, you know, this strip club called One-Eyed Jack. And I'm like, what? What? I don't want to go to this. Like, what are you talking about? We get there, you go right down a stairwell, and as you go down the stairwell, every famous person you could ever imagine in your brain is on the wall. They've been to this place. So as I'm going down,
like
I'm
who?
Like, damn, Michael Jordan, Jack Nicholson.
Are they signed?
But they're there, and they're at the place.
Oh, it's like they're posing with the owner
or whatever it is. And so I'm going down.
It's like going to Katz's Deli in the Lower East Side.
Well, I mean, kind of like that. You're like, wow.
There's except some, Japan.
This must be kind of good because it's – and I walk in. It's like a jungle. And there's like steam rising from the bottom. And it was the most beautiful girls I've ever seen in my life in one place. Yes, just all these Eastern European girls. It was phenomenal. And yes, I will always be in my brain, Sapp sitting at a table in the corner with a stash of cash.
A stack of yen.
Yen, like this high, with his thing on, sitting there.
Just like waiting for you guys.
Waiting for us to get there to hang out.
How did he get there so much more before you guys?
I don't know, because Sab knew everybody. He had homies in Japan. He'd be like, pick me up, let's get out.
Well, the story you talked about him after he got the sack and bowing sums up Sab perfectly.
That was that week. You're exactly right.
He got a sack early in the preseason game.
It's Curtis Martin playing running back for the Jets. First play of the games, right up the middle. They're going to run Curtis Martin. Sab busts in the backfield. I mean, picks Curtis Martin up.
Who's a big dude.
Yes. And throws him on the ground. And he goes like this to the whole crowd. And the whole crowd.
Just gets, like thundersticks.
They have those things. Unbelievable.
Cam just let me know from the back that One-Eyed Jack's closed in 2007.
Is that right?
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Man.
But.
Well,
so, breaking
there might
news
have been some
Cam.
Shady things going on
he
there.
He called it a crying shame.
Are you disappointed?
Man, that had to be BCS top five strip clubs in the world right there.
How close are Tiki and Rondé? Not to change the conversation.
Oh, yeah. No, they're extremely close.
Okay.
Yes.
Listen, I bet you
a lot
of people...
When he comes up to New York, he stays with Tiki.
Yeah. I bet you what's funny about them is... People probably ask one to talk about the other one a lot.
Right. Yeah, I'm
like,
sure.
I bet you a lot of people ask Rondé to talk about Tiki a lot.
I think he gets it more than Tiki gets asked about Rondé because Rondé's in Tampa and not everybody knows him. But
they're a case study in terms of New York bias, like how much bigger you will be in New York than anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Rondé was a much better player, but like, there's one barber in the world that's Tiki.
Yeah, you're right. And I'm not going to say he's a much better player because Tiki was...
He was special.
He was special. He's definitely one of the best running backs
in
football.
He was a true three down back.
For about a five-year period. Rondé, though, is unquestionably a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's first ballot, questionable there, definitely in that second or third ballot. I mean, we're talking about a guy that I think at the time, and maybe you look this up, I think he was the first to get to the 2020 club.
Yes.
I think
there's only two people in the 40-20 club.
Woodson.
Yeah.
Right. And Charles,
I know, like, Brian Dawkins is in the 2020 club, but, like, Rondé was there much before him
and
started after him.
Right. I think Rondé
was
first.
One of the first blitzing corners that had a ton of success getting to the quarterback.
Right.
What were we talking about? Okay, so he was talking about, like, observing Jameis. You came in today, and I haven't talked to you in a while, and you said you're hearing some things about Paxton Lynch.
Yes.
So what are you hearing about Paxton Lynch?
Well, I just was told by some people around the NFL that Denver was just thrilled with Paxton Lynch. The way he looked,
afterwards.
The way he acted. Yes, afterwards.
So, like,
right.
In the facility.
Yes. They just are impressed with physical ability. I think they're very encouraged with where his mental state is as far as picking up the offense. Yeah, I think they are extremely excited. Whether he starts this year or not, I don't know. But I think they look at it and go, man, we might have hit a home run here. Like we said, there's a lot to love about him. Yes, the film was raw, but you have a chance to really hit a superstar here.
You had a tweet about that, right?
No, the tweet was about Sam Bradford.
Oh, well, I think that's
are you ready for that?
Well, I have one more question against Paxton.
Yeah.
Do you really think they'll start the year with Mark Sanchez and Paxton Lynch as the Super Bowl champions?
Do you
think Mark Sanchez will be their starting quarterback?
Yeah, I do. Right now, yes, I do.
Wow.
I just don't see – we've had this conversation a lot.
I know. Then let's not have it again.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see if you really think they're done.
He's going to be – yes, he's going to be a perfect fit for this offense, Sanchez.
And then you think Paxton plays this year or next year?
And like I said, Sanchez is better than Peyton or Osweiler.
Do you think Paxton plays this year or next year?
I think Paxton will play next year.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you got for Sam?
So the tweet we got about Sam Bradford came from Alex Lara at SlickLiving14. Will Sam Bradford's recent actions cause problems in the Eagles locker room? So I know there's a bunch of stuff you want to talk about, Adam, but that was the question we got on
Twitter.
What
do you think
today about
that? What's not talked about right now is Fletcher Cox hasn't shown up to 3 days of practice,
Sam. Right. I don't think it's going to cause anything. Like, the one thing NFL players realize in a locker room
it's
get your money, and this is a business. And as much as people want to blame the players for these kind of things, the owners made it this way. They're the ones that decide to not make contracts guaranteed. They can cut you on a whim. They basically can do whatever they want to the NFL.
And this is the only way the players can fight back.
And this is the only way the players can fight back. Exactly.
What is your take on Sam Bradford's really brief holdout?
I have no issue with it. None. In fact, I wouldn't even be mad with him if he didn't hold out till training camp. Who cares? Sam Bradford, in my eyes, listen, I know we all go, he signed a contract and he's got to be accountable to the handshake and saying, I signed a 2-year deal. Well, yeah, I know they told him they were going to draft a quarterback. They didn't tell him they were going to draft a quarterback at number 2. That changes things completely. Mm-hmm. Sam Bradford has no chance of succeeding there. If you guys, like I said, start out 3-1 and he is playing above average football, they're going to be calling him to be benched. If Carson Wentz plays good in preseason games 1, 2, and 3, Sam Bradford might not even make it to be the starter for the first game of the year. He is in a total no-win situation. Mm. If he plays phenomenal football.
What do you take then from fans that would say he's in a great win situation, he feels no pressure because he doesn't have to throw the football, and he's getting paid $20 million? That's what fans would say. What would you say to that?
Yeah, well, I would just say that's they're being shallow-minded, and they're not thinking enough of NFL players and their passion for football and wanting to play.
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about, NFL football, right? Oh, these guys don't really care. They're getting paid so much money. I like watching college game because they're more invested. That's the biggest bull ever. All your NFL players were the leaders of your college football team that were getting the guys whether to come over and hang out for a barbecue or let's get at the field and work out or let's play better in the second half. Those are all the guys that are in the
NFL.
They're
all the guys that care the most.
Exactly right. So I hate when I hear that crap. Sam Bradford wants to play. I'm sure he has a great drive in being extremely successful in the NFL. He's in an extremely tough situation. He has a lot of the power. And if I were him, I would abuse it. Like, OTA, I say it because I look back and go, I'm one of the reasons you have to abuse the power a little bit. I got tendered as a first and third rounder in my first year's free agency, and I signed a deal for $2.1 million because nobody was going to trade a first and a third round pick to acquire me. So, and I had a chance to hold out and ask for more money, and I should have done it. I came off a year where we went to the playoffs. I played in a playoff game. I played really well, and I had all the power, and I said, you know what? I'll be the good teammate and show up. Well, you know what? Week 3, I lost my spleen, and my career was never the same, and I never got the big payday because of it. So this is a different case where, yes, he's got the payday, but it's more to him than that. He wants to play. He wants to start. He wants his career to go the way he envisioned it to go as a number one pick.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's in a position right now where everyone looks at it and goes, Sam Bradford messed up. I look at it and go, No, the Philadelphia Eagles messed up. They should have realized they might be in this trade block for the number two quarterback and before giving him $18 million.
I just don't think they were expecting the Dolphins to take Byron Maxwell and Kiko Alonso to move up. That's the part that no one's talking
about. Maybe you're right. Maybe they didn't
When they call them on, they're like, okay, all right. But I think that's a very – and I thank you for sharing that because I think that was an interesting perspective. But it's funny. Sam Bradford, everyone goes, he's made like $100 million because of that rookie contract.
Yeah.
But look, man, when you're a professional athlete, you're doing it to challenge yourself, for the love of the game, for all that stuff, in addition to the money. And it's like at any job, and everyone's heard this, value.
Right.
Just give me the value. But it sounds like Bradford wants to play. He's had like 8 different offensive coordinators. He's never been healthy. He probably finally feels healthy after last year. Had success at the end of the year. As the betterment of the Eagles, it's the Carson Wentz show right now. And they're going to say, play it for a year and get better and then make money elsewhere. Yeah. But he's going...
I don't know why. The NFL is the only sport where like they want the players to have the lunch pail mentality. Baseball, basketball, we don't give a damn. They can be whatever, they show up at a Gucci fashion show and the next night spend $20,000 on a bottle.
World soccer, world football,
but
even
the
more
NFL,
so.
Man, if you act like that, for whatever reason, our fan bases, they don't want to see your face. I guess that's what it is.
You have a helmet on, you have a number, and all I give a crap about is what you did for me in fantasy.
Yeah.
Dude, we don't give a about defensive players because you're not scoring touchdowns.
You're right.
You're not catching balls or giving us – look, fans like are selfish.
Right.
What are you doing for me? You're my player. You're on my team. We got another tweet about another quarterback who is following through.
Episode 62, and there's a glisten on his forehead.
So the question we got about the Jets from Daniel Hunter at Danlaw Hunter. He said, should the Jets back down and pay Fitz, or should they roll the dice with Geno, Hack, and Petty? And then he capped off his tweet with, glad you're back, boys.
Ah, thanks,
so,
man.
So stick with Geno, Hack, and Petty, or pay Fitz?
Well,
and Geno.
Yeah, first of all, Geno. That's the one we got to talk about. The hell with Petty. I doubt he'll be ready for that.
Ready.
Right. I mean, that's Baylor, and we've talked about
and
that.
And you love Hackenberg.
Yeah,
I think that was your highest grade of the draft.
Yeah, right, Hackenberg.
That was an F- on
that's
draft.
That's one of the most least talented films of the second round draft pick in the history of football. It's really all there is to it. But, no, you can't pay Ryan Fitzpatrick $18 million a year. That's not what he's worth. They're going to upset their whole team if they end up spending a ton of money on a guy like
him.
Like
the whole league
and then they can't
upset.
Re-sign Muhammad Wilkerson and something
when
like that.
You say upset the team, you mean like the players won't be happy about
they're
it?
They're going to upset the team also just the contract structures of what people are asking for, what they're trying to demand from the GM and the front office, whatever it may be. First of all, you guys know my thoughts. And what was his name? Dan?
Daniel Hunter.
Dan, you guys would have missed the playoffs by one game if Geno Smith was your starting quarterback, too. And in fact, I think maybe you would have made it if Geno Smith was your starting quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the answers to all your problems. Yes, do you want Ryan Fitzpatrick? Sure. But it's got to be at the right price. This is about, you know, what you have in stock. It's supply and demand.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of demand for 6'1 quarterbacks who are not that great at athletes, haven't shown great decision-making through their career, and are below-average NFL throwers. No, that's not in great NFL demand.
Yeah.
So
it's been interesting
nice
to watch. Once Geno got punched in the face by Ike Nwapali,
yes,
everyone in the sports world was like, he's not a good teammate, he's not a true leader, and by the way, he wasn't that good anyway.
Right.
And I feel like everyone sold everything. I remember I said on this podcast that I thought it could be beneficial to Geno because Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to show that he's not that great and people might be calling for Geno to come back.
Yes.
But, I mean, no one brings up Geno's name when talking about the Jets, and I just think it's interesting.
It is interesting, and, well, we thought that might happen. You're right. I thought it, too. Like, maybe they'll – but the Jets are so talented. It doesn't matter who you put at quarterback there. They would have been in the same situation.
You call.
Right.
Speaking about coming back, a lot of shakeup in terms of football media, which we're involved in. Don't going to talk about other people because it's fine. ESPN, I was shocked. Well, one, Tirico left.
Yeah.
So now it's Gruden empty in there. You know Gruden well.
Sean McDonough.
Yeah,
Sean
I'm
McDonough.
Sure that's going to be culture shock for Gruden.
Why?
Well, because Gruden's he's a coach. He's a creature of habit. He's got a great relationship with Tirico. Tirico knows exactly how to lead him down the road, and Tirico's great at laying out and letting John just steal the show.
Sean's great as well, but it's a new adjustment.
It's a new adjustment, and John is certainly one of the more unique personalities to deal with in any business.
The one that I was really shocked by, though, was the fact that Chris Carter is out.
Right.
And Ray Lewis is out. Ray Lewis I wasn't shocked by, because if you've ever seen Ray Lewis after a game, while I find it very entertaining, someone explaining to me that momentum is real is not necessary. Like, I didn't need
that's
that.
A really good
I found it really funny, but I didn't need it.
Right.
Chris Carter, you loved Chris Carter.
I did, yes.
And now Randy Moss, and I also find it very odd that Randy Moss is
very
the one replacing
weird, right?
Chris Carter.
Right.
But it's like, that's what happened in Minnesota with the wide receivers?
Yes.
But what is your take on
all
that?
Well, my take is, first of all, Chris Carter and Randy Moss, I think football-wise, are very similar. They are very deep, thoughtful football minds. They have a good clue of what's going on in the football world. Schematically, what players are going through. They have contacts to where they can hear kind of the vibes of what's going on. So Randy Moss is maybe just a younger, sexier name, but I think a lot of his football perspective will be a lot like Chris Carter. Yes, I like Chris Carter. I thought he had a great feel for NFL football. He understands the game. Like you said, he's got the contacts. I got to think with Chris Carter, I mean, he's had issues up there with being the fall guy. That
the
had to hurt him a little
one.
Bit.
Right.
And then he had one other incident, did he not? I believe, I thought earlier on in his career. So I don't know what's going on in ESPN, but I certainly looked at Chris Carter as one of the
guys that you actually listen
there's
to.
There's only a few people I will listen to on ESPN, because the rest of them I think are full of crap and don't know crap. But Chris Carter was a guy, when he was on, I didn't always agree with what he said, but I said, I'd always go, that was a good point, or that's well thought out.
Yes.
Or he's talked to somebody who knows something about that.
Back to the Gruden-Tirico thing, your dad has been with Jim Nance for how long? 20-something years, maybe?
No, but it's probably, let me just think about it, like 13, 12, somewhere in there.
So that's been consistency.
Yes,
and they become like probably that work relationship.
Right.
How, and you've been in the booth, and you've done games, and you've done different guys.
Yeah.
How hard is it to mess with that?
It's getting to know the person. Yeah, I've done maybe, six games in my NFL career, seven games in my NFL announcing career.
You did one with my boy Carter Blackburn, right?
I've done a different guy in every game, except for Brian Anderson, who I've done twice.
Yep.
Everybody else, I've done a different guy. I find my most helpful thing with the whole working relationship is the Friday night dinner. The Friday night dinner, they're going to get a feel. We're going to get a feel for each other. They're going to get a feel for me and how much I know and how much I've studied.
Because you put a little potato vodka back.
Well, and yes,
truth comes
and
out.
You know me. I mean, I let the four-letter words fly, and I just talk ball. And I think that them getting to know the other person and him getting to know me right away ends a lot of questions, because then they go, man, Chris knows a lot about football. I don't have to worry about Chris. He's done his homework here. And then we could just start to have a good, productive relationship from there on out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is.
I'm curious what your perspective was on that, kind of growing up with all that stuff.
It will also be interesting to watch Monday Night Football week one next year and then watch it week 16 and see how different or similar John is.
You know why?
Definitely.
Because momentum is real. Week 1 to week 16 are not the same. This is 6 after the 1. Momentum is real.
They are not. Week 1 is
he
not the same.
He did wear amazing clothing, though.
Amazing.
Ray Lewis's suits were, like, I've never seen someone that big have a tailored suit.
Right.
And Ray Lewis was also one of those guys, when guys would come off the sideline, they'd be like, man, that's Ray Lewis.
Yes.
But, man, Ray Lewis's speeches.
Ray, yes. I mean, yeah, Ray Lewis is special. He's an
interesting bird.
He is he's a legend of legends.
You never really knew Chris Carter, but you knew Randy Moss.
Yes, I
guess. And you had good experiences with Randy.
Love Randy Moss.
Because you were on the Titans together.
The Titans together. I mean, man, Randy Moss was a blast to be around.
Yeah, what's he like as a teammate?
First of all, works harder than people ever gave him credit for. Extremely intelligent. I mean, Randy Moss, the kind of guy that can pick up the playbook in 2 days. He's quarterback intelligence. Like,
really?
Oh, you're watching this guy and you'll check to that play. Okay, next day you come out to practice, he'll be like, I got it. Yep, don't even tell me. I got it. So football IQ off the charts. But, man, like a Warren Sapp on a more quiet version.
Okay.
When he walked in the locker room, we were like, hey, there's Moss. He's walking in. And he might only have a few things to say, but he had a great presence. And whatever he was going to say was going to be a good, just polarizing thing for the day. Whether it was going
to
be,
come to mind?
I'm going
to
whoop your in poker later, or if it was just
and
about.
And the country accent is still shocking to me when he starts.
See, because me used to play a game where, you know, if you throw it in the chest right here, 1 point, 2 points here, we'd play like first to 21 before practice, me and him. Or we'd do one-hand catches. We'd have to do stuff like that. And that was one of the greatest compliments ever. He goes, Sims, you might have the best hands on the team. That's what he said to me. Randy Moss said that to me. Because I, of course, was like, my hands are better than yours, Moss. Are you kidding me? I'll Moss you all day long.
Man, he was so unbelievable.
Yes.
One thing I want to talk about, too, is you were saying about, screw Kenny Clark. We're not talking about that. Curry, unanimous MVP.
That is bullcrap, though.
Yeah, we'll do that another all time. Right. Curry, unanimous MVP, got every single vote for first place.
Right.
He is the only player in NBA history.
Yeah, that's
not
my
Jordan,
problem.
Not Magic, not LeBron, not Kobe, not anybody. First unanimous MVP. He joins Brady and Wayne Gretzky as the only players to win unanimous in their sports.
Right.
A lot of people are saying it has to do with the fact that this is the first time the NBA vote is public.
Right.
To where there's like actual accountability to it.
Right.
But for him to be up there with those two names, why did you say in the beginning it's crazy?
Well, I just think it's crazy that he gets to be the only unanimous MVP of all time when you just talked about guys like Bird, Jordan, Magic Johnson, LeBron James. Listen, I understand the year he had was really special, but I also look at the playoffs and go, they'd probably get to the NBA Finals without Stephen Curry, maybe. I understand the overtime 17 points was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really like Stephen Curry. You think I don't like him?
No, I never said no.
Because I'm a LeBron fan, for one. And, yeah, I don't think Steph Curry could have ever brought some of the teams that LeBron has brought to the finals in general.
Yeah.
I think Steph needs a guy or two around him to open up the floor a little bit.
I think the issue
is the
word
valuable.
People get so caught up in the word valuable and what it means. I wish it was really called the award given to the player that will always remember the year 2016 of basketball.
Right.
Just like Cam Newton this season for football.
Well, I would say nobody was more valuable.
But here's the thing. Right. Steph Curry's team won 73 games most of all time.
Yes.
Steph Curry's shooting statistics were the greatest of all
time.
They
were sick.
So he had the personal and the team-wide
and
stuff.
No other guy that really had a definitive year to go against this
Kawhi
year.
Kawhi was fantastic. LeBron, Westbrook, Durant, fantastic.
Right.
Chris Paul, fantastic.
Right.
But it was the year of Steph. And I also think social media-wise, much like Cam Newton, it's funny that they're like friends and Steph is a Carolina Panthers fan. After every game, you saw a Vine of Cam Newton handing a ball to a kid.
Yeah, right.
Or you saw an Instagram of them dabbing.
Right.
Every basketball game, I see a Vine of Steph Curry hitting a half-court shot. He is a master of that six-second moment. So in our culture right now, it spreads. But I really think I'm not upset Steph got it because I think he deserves it. I'm upset that some media bums back in the years past felt the need to ruin that for LeBron and Shaq and Jordan because they wanted to be different and it was anonymous.
Right.
So they didn't have to answer it. Howard Beck here at Bleacher Report was one of the leaders going, put your face on it because we all need to know if you really voted Chris Paul over Steph Curry, then you have to explain why.
Yes.
You can't just do it because you don't want him to get it.
Yeah.
It's like the Baseball Hall of Fame or he doesn't deserve to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right.
Like the fact that who didn't get in? Ken Griffey Jr. didn't get like every single vote.
Right.
And it's like, who's not going to vote for Ken Griffey Jr.? For me, it's like the media, like being like, oh, you're not getting
or,
it.
Or I'm from LA, so I got to vote for a Clippers guy that's in the race. Yeah, I do hate that. I understand that. Listen, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he does deserve the unanimous vote. I don't know. I also watch a lot of NBA basketball here once the football season's over, and I look at the San Antonio Spurs and go, man, they wouldn't be worth a damn if it weren't for Kawhi Leonard.
Yes.
Because LaMarcus Aldridge wasn't really great until the last maybe month of the year.
It is so hard to evaluate.
So how does he not get one vote, Kawhi Leonard?
Warriors,
he's the best defensive player in the NBA, and he was the best offensive player on the second best team in the NBA. I guess that's where I get a little weird.
No, I'm right there with you, especially because they had like 69 wins. It's not like they had 60 or 59.
Right. Right.
They are suffering, I think, from the same thing that the Patriots suffer from, where there is such a great culture of success that it touches everybody, and we try and figure out who's most responsible for it, but it's like, okay, Steve Kerr, I mean, we are debating whether Steve Kerr was the coach of the year, whether Luke Walton should have gotten it, because it's such a well-run franchise. Also, I mean, if you guys are watching the NBA and you're watching the Warriors, look at the physical conditioning of everyone on their team.
Yeah, they're phenomenal.
Look at the patience and the attentiveness on every play.
Right.
It really does remind me of the Patriots in terms of the level of execution. execution. And a lot of times it's hard to get value when it's the cog that or the unit as a whole is the reason you're successful, and each piece you can still win without. Like, is Clay overrated? Sometimes I think he is. You think Draymond's overrated? I think he's definitely a top 10 player.
That's crazy.
It's not crazy.
he's in the series itself, he's the fifth best player. In Oklahoma City Golden State, Draymond Green is the fifth best player, but he thinks he's 10 in the NBA. That's crazy. I'm rooting for the Spurs and the Cavs in the finals. I'm a Golden State hater.
Me and Sims have a bet that I have Warriors and he has Spurs, so I feel very good about it.
One other thing is,
I asked this to Braxton Miller. I never actually got your take on it, but Ja Rule had an interesting tweet that got a lot of attention. Right. I'd like to read it to you. He said, "This is why I love America. We all laughing at the Jordan crying face. He gets a dollar every time it gets posted. Joke's on us." First of all, do you know what the Jordan crying face is?
I only because I hear people around the office talk about it. Like,
but do you know what it is? Like, if I said on an essay, write what the Jordan crying face is.
I am pretty sure it has to do with when he was retiring, right? Retiring or Hall of Fame
speech?
Hall of Fame.
But you know what it looks like.
I think I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so, like, this is why Sims doesn't use Twitter or anything like that. So anytime someone loses,
right,
we put the Jordan crying face on.
Right.
So, like, if Steph Curry, like, had an awful play to lose the game, they're going to put the Jordan crying face on him.
Right.
You know, when North Carolina lost, they put, that picture. They put the Jordan crying face on Jordan.
Right.
Yeah, and it's become this meme where, even though he's, like, the most successful athlete of all time, right now that face represents failure.
Right.
Like, when you mess up, it's that. So Ja Rule tweeted it out. What did you think about his comment? That Jordan gets a dollar every time we tweet it out.
I mean, if there's anybody in our country that doesn't need a damn dollar, it's him. So
So the thing that's funny about it is, like, no one gets a dollar for this.
I was going to say, is that real?
No.
Yeah,
I just
wanted
to see if you would fall for it. Ja Rule legitimately, I guess, thought that Jordan got a dollar for things getting tweeted out.
Yeah. I did not think that. I was going to ask that and then got sidetracked. But, yeah, this is not like music playing, right? I mean, that's ridiculous. But
I'm glad that your level of, like, internet reality is a little bit higher than Ja Rule's.
I only know, like, the Jordan crying face because I hang back there in the media lab every now and then. The guys that make Game of Zones, I hear that talk and I kind of get caught up on my pop culture.
And that's how Chris Sims knows what the crying Jordan face is.
Speaking of pop culture, did you hear they're remaking Space Jam?
Are they really?
With LeBron.
Is that right? Wow. That's kind of cool.
Did you like Space Jam?
I like the song that was from Space Jam.
What was that?
The Michael Jordan Jam. Jam. It ain't too much for me. Jam.
Was that Michael Jackson?
It was Michael Jackson in the video with Michael Jordan.
Okay.
I don't really remember the movie a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what was he? Gets stolen by Martians, right? Or something like that?
Yeah. He has to fight back against the Martians.
Monstars, the Martians, they take the skills from the NBA players.
Right. That's cool. LeBron's getting to do it, though. I'll probably watch it just because it's LeBron. I'm on the bandwagon.
I'm hoping they make Kobe, like, a villain in that movie.
Is he going to be in it?
I don't think
so. He has to be a villain.
All right, well, what were you going to ask?
I don't even know.
You said, are we going to?
I don't even know. I have no idea.
And that's time to end the podcast.
Pop culture references. I think next time we should either do, I kind of want to start doing, like, movie reviews with Sims or, like, pop culture questionnaires with
Sims. Okay, I like that, too. We'll bring it on.
We can do more memes.
Memes.
Yeah.
Memes.
Memes. Yeah. Sorry. Right. Little Braxton Miller.
He didn't even know what a meme was.
He didn't even get the joke.
I did not.
We're going to have him define words. That's amazing. All right, Sims, you were great today.
All right, thanks. You were too.
Fendrick, you were great as always.
Good night, everybody.
Episode 62 in the books.
I want to put Fendrick right here.
That would be so awkward.
That's why I want him right here.
Show the camera again where you want to have him.
Can we put Fendrick right here? I want him sitting above us right here. That's where I want you.
And he smacks you in the back of the head.
Well, back in the old days when we didn't have these damn cameras here and we just did the audio in the crappy office and we held the mic, I'd be sitting there talking to you guys like this. Well, guys, that's what we did. You're right there with us.
Now you're afraid
to get in the conversation.
We were also doing spirit animals for NFL players for 20 minutes.
They brought the Sims and Left Go podcast. That's what they got to get.
Yeah, but you know what? If we didn't have that, we wouldn't have these beautiful people in the control room. Look at their smiling faces. Let's see Cam's forehead.
Hey, new girl, wake your butt up, new girl.
So you haven't introduced yourself to her yet, huh?
New girl. She's a rookie. Great. Hey, Rook. What's up, Rook?
All right, let's see what George is up to. Is George up to anything fun in the back? This is where George...
Oh, he's not doing anything if he's with him.
Oh, man.
With Q, you know he's not doing anything.
You know what's great about George? Is he smiles all the time, man. He's just a happy kid.
You Philadelphia people, you're
so
happy.
Hey, Sims and Lefko, subscribe on iTunes. I want to give a shout out to Audio Boom, where they always promote our podcast. We actually have to go and take photos with them soon.
That's cool.
Which is going to be hilarious. So thank you so much for the support. As always, thank you. Share it. Comment. Like. You guys are awesome. And we'll see you for episode 63.